This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is Rita Liu and you're listening to Enterprise. We've got the folks from Digital News Asia here, Chong Jin Seong, Anusha Kandasivam and Karamjit Singh. And I thought Christmas came early because I thought Karam wasn't going to turn up, but he is here. So, anyway, of course, what we do...
What are we doing the last show of the year?
What we do here is we talk about tech stories, and of course it's year end and most universities and businesses are winding down with year end holidays. Even here at the office, Bandar Utama, everyone seems to be on leave. There's lots of parking space. But the students of KDU University College, a Bachelor of Game Development course, are not wasting any time to prepare themselves for next year with their annual Jingle Mingle Student Showcase event. And Jin, you were there. Yes. What's that all about?
Yeah, so this, like you mentioned, the students are pretty busy right now. But the event happened about two Fridays ago. But I was there and I caught what was going on over there. So there are a couple of students, about 60 over, that were presenting their showcasing their projects. And you know, actually this event actually was organized by KDU College as a platform for the students to promote, actually it's for them to promote the students out to the industry at large. So most of the students are actually presenting out to their peers, but at the same time there'll be industry people who are coming in and checking out. And I actually did see a couple of independent game studios and some larger studios around. They were also like, I wouldn't say they're shopping lah, but they're actually just checking out the talents. So okay. That's right there.
Did you see anything interesting?
There was some interesting thing was that actually the students were not just working on mobile games and stuff, because majority of studios I do tend to come across in Malaysia tend to focus on mobile. Mm-hmm. So actually some of the students actually have taken the initiative to work on something more complex, which is multiplayer games. Mm-hmm. So they are slightly more complex, they have more work to do and everything. And yeah, the independent developers present there, some from Dreamtree, some from Y Creative, they were quite impressed and say, oh, actually this year they were more the students are taking on a bigger challenge. Some of them taking a bigger challenge. Yeah,
That's what you want, man. Huh? You got to be bold and brave. Otherwise, you don't make a dent in the universe, man.
Dent or a ding. Yeah, okay. Ding. So anyway, sticking with the holiday season, fraud. Fraud is on the rise.
Oh, yes.
A new report from payment platform Stripe unveils several new patterns to assist online businesses as they combat fraudulent activity. Tell us more, Jin.
So you know that there's like 11-11, 12-12, all these big sales and happening like that, that's not when the frauds are going to strike. They're going to strike when no one is looking. So not during big sales periods, but during
when
the
your
quiet
defenses
period.
Are down.
Actually, it's much simpler than that. They do when you're sleeping. So so apparently, you know, part of the trend that Stripe has noticed is that, you know, businesses, they gain hit at hours when it's not business hours for them. So there'll be like a bit funny transactions happening in the middle, 2-3 a.m. at night. And that's when, you know, sometimes, you know, people can start making like weird transactions that no one would typically notice because they're not at their stations.
Yep. Right. And it's like probably a smallish amount.
I'm not sure how big the amount may be, but I think there's it suffice to say they did advise that, you know, due to these kind of transactions happening at off business times, they said businesses should be more observant of things that happen off peak time, and perhaps install like manual checks and balances that, you know, you do review. Is this transactions going through at this weird hour? Is it coming? And look at the credit cards as well. Are these transactions coming from within the country or outside some funny country? And it's like, you got to make sure that, you know, this is a legit transaction. So I mean, they advise that this is how businesses should be able to stay on top of the fraudsters and protect their customers at the same time.
Okay, so this is, of course, they're attacking the businesses out there.
Yeah, your e-commerce businesses. Anybody's doing a transaction or services. Well, but I think it's more likely you want physical goods. Like, why do I call Uber in the middle of the night and that doesn't make any sense at all? Mm. So, like, I mean, this is more likely for any physical goods, I think.
Yeah, more physical goods there. Okay. Anu, the largest entrepreneurial event in Malaysia's tech ecosystem ended last week. And, of course, this is the GEC, the Global Entrepreneurial Community Summit. So it cuts across all sectors over 2 days. And digital was, of course, a very heavy focus. And interestingly enough, Japanese-American theoretical physicist, futurist, and popularizer of science, Dr. Michio Kaku, was present as well. So what did the physicist talk about?
Yeah, so I was there at his talk. So actually, he opened his speech with the question, why should a physicist talk about the future? Yeah, so... he says because, well, physicists basically invent the future. They invent stuff that is futuristic. So he can sort of, because of that, because of the way his mind works, he can sort of see what the what's coming in the future. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, he had so many fans in the audience. People were cheering and laughing and clapping. It was he has such a big following here.
And you know, eight times there were a lot of people lining up as well to ask him questions.
Yeah, a lot of people. Yeah, and people were lining the walls. There were not enough seats. And
really?
Karam's 14-year-old son was there as well. He wanted to come and watch
him speak. And my 11-year-old also wanted to do. Can you believe it? I said, no, I think you're too young. They'll say this guy is abusing his media credentials and you're bringing an 11-year-old.
I thought you were afraid of him thinking of the future too soon.
Never too young.
Yeah. I know, yeah, but for an event like that where, you know, I think they're really targeting, you know, university kids and above, so I didn't want to bring both of them come up. But the 11-year-old will run around very fast, then I got to keep an eye on him.
Yeah, but anyway, since it was an entrepreneurial summit,
correct.
So Kaku did talk to the entrepreneurs in the room, and he basically said, so Malaysia is on its way. It has the ingredients to create a successful digital economy. Mm-hmm. It has a good workforce. It has people who can work together. It has a sympathetic government who is doing all these policies and initiatives. It lacks a spark.
Oh, I was going to say, but what is the spark?
Yeah, so I asked him, what is the spark? And he said, we need more entrepreneurs, lots and lots more entrepreneurs.
We need the all spark. Yeah. Anyway,
yeah, and the thing is, this is only going to be achieved. This ignition is only going to be achieved with education and a culture shift. So culture shift meaning... we kind of have a culture over here where it's not so great to make mistakes, and shaking up the status quo is not a good thing. There were a lot of people in the audience and the moderator as well who asked him, how do we create a Silicon Valley here? And he basically said the one big thing about Silicon Valley that made it work is because the people there were not afraid to make mistakes. They had incredible, weird, some maybe stupid ideas, but they tried it out. If it didn't work, okay, we'll just learn and we'll move on to our next incredible, stupid idea. But over here, it seems there's still a bit of a fear of, you know, because we need to get it right the first time. It's that kind of culture where it's all drilled into us. We need to be correct all the time. We need to succeed the first time.
I think also the other thing is that we're not hungry enough. You know, Malaysians aren't starving.
I think there are some Malaysians who are very hungry, but there's not enough. Basically, that's what he was saying. And education is also another thing. And he said the kind of education that we have here in Malaysia, in the US as well, and pretty much everywhere around the world, is that it kind of makes science boring.
It kills the interest for science.
Mm-hmm. You have really boring teachers telling you really boring things, and then you just think, oh, what's the point of all of this? And then you don't care anymore.
But that's dangerous. I mean, my son picked up on that, right? My teachers are boring. I say, wait, don't give yourself that excuse, because come on, how many people had exciting English teachers or journalists? When you go to university or so, how many of your teachers are exciting? It's hugely unfair to say, hey, please inspire me, man.
Exactly.
I'm this gem waiting to be molded. No, come on.
Same conversation I had with my son. And he was talking about a teacher, and I said, get over it. Yeah. It's life.
Exactly.
You're going to meet people in life when you're going to work, or you're going to have bosses, or you're going to be a boss where it just isn't going to be wonderful, but you've got to just stick with it.
Yeah. That's what Kaku said as well. Yeah. You need to do your own reading. You need to do your own experimentation.
That said, Antam from Ace Adventure, right? Okay. So she's got her Dwi Emas, which is the first financial school that teaches entrepreneurial skills. And then she came up with this game, the Chem Caper.
Okay.
It's to learn chemistry and everything. Yeah, so I mean, there are sparks here and there, and hopefully, you know, the next generation. I don't know if we can wait that long, but you know, but it's, I think it's happening, but it's not in mainstream education yet.
Yeah, it's not.
That's the thing. Yeah. Mm. All right, we'll talk about other stories after this. Karamjit Singh, Anusha Kandasivam, and Chong Jin Seong from DigitalNewsAsia.com. Stay tuned to Enterprise. BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Enterprise. Good morning, Frida Liu here. The folks from DigitalNewsAsia.com, Karamjit Singh, Anusha Kandasivam, and Chong Jin Seong. Of course, we're talking about what's happening in the tech space as we're winding down the year. Karam, you spoke to a few VCs from US talking about investing here in KL. So what are they looking at? And any particular sectors or interesting observations compared to the VCs here?
Yeah, I think before I go there, let me just end with the super club. I will just stay with the global entrepreneurship community, because you know, when you say the year is winding down, I totally don't feel that at all. I mean, you know, the biggest event in the tech and entrepreneurial ecosystem in Malaysia is this yearly Global Entrepreneurship Community Summit, right? Which is held in December, so likely it's going to be held again in December. So many interesting things happening. I met as part of that event, the Magic brought in this guy called Christian Ranjan. He's a business school professor in there, and he's an entrepreneur. So, and he's created a company called Engage Innovate. So it was interesting talking to him. So he's tall like me. So it's one of the rare times where you can
see someone eye to eye.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
All right.
And so he is, what he's saying is that, you know, look, because he's a business professor, you know, a business school teacher, he has read all the management book, all the leadership books, and, you know, your lean methodology, lean startup, all that. And he says, hey, why is it still taking so long to launch a company, you know, to launch a product? And even with the lean startup, you know, methodology, it can still take 6 months or longer. Mm. Say, why not launch a company or a product within, you know, or within 1 week or 3 weeks, you know? Why take that? So he said within 3 weeks. Why want to take longer? And I loved it because he doesn't accept that. I said, look, everybody, when they run an accelerator, they say, come with your idea, correct? Mm. You must start with your idea. Then we'll help you sharpen it, refine it, or throw it out because it's a horrible idea in the end. And that goes through. But he says, no. He wants to hack into that. And it's great to hear someone who's thinking a bit crazy out of the box, really. Because mainstream, out of the box, mainstream thinking is going to an accelerator, right? And quickly accelerate your idea. He says, no. He says, look, what I'm going to do, it takes too long to refine the idea. Forget about idea. You want to solve pain points. Pain points are there right now. What he did, so he's and this is still experimentation, although it's 1 year old. He brings together, so he has this cohort, let's call it accelerators, all right? And he tells people, come with your drive, come with your energy, nothing else. Don't come with your idea, because when you come with your idea, then you're going to spend time convincing the rest that your idea is the best and it can work. Don't come with ideas, right? Very interesting, right? I've never heard of someone say, you know, bring a group of people together from all over the world, drive and energy, that's all.
Right.
And then with the idea that maybe at the end of it, you can set up a company too, maybe. And then what he does is, he brings corporate customers, because right now all the four cohorts have been in Norway, his network is there. They go and convince companies, come and share a pain point that you want to solve in your company, and you're happy for you guys. You 15, 20 people, I've never seen you before. You dress funny. Oh, you're from Punjab. Okay, fine, you know, whatever it is. Look, these are the pain points I want to solve. And what's that you wearing on your head? Oh, it's not a bandage. Okay, it's a turban, sir. All right, so whatever it is. You got people from all makes and colors and shapes and sizes who come because they get drive energy. You got corporates here sharing their pain points with you, and then you leave the room, and then Christian will say, okay, guys, these are the pain points. Who is interested to solve this pain point, that pain point? And then within that group, you know, they then form, they've all not met each other before, right? Then they form, you know, a group, say, I like to solve that problem. So it goes from groups of 4 to 7. But he said, in hindsight, 7 is too big. So I think they do 4 or 5, you know, a team. You coalesce around the idea. Then you start, you know, trying to see if that you can quickly create a product, you know, to solve that idea. And then you go out in week 2, right? You go out and start looking for customers already. And he said, and you actually can come back, and in week 2 then, because they use their network, because, you know, you guys come from all over the world, how can you go out on the streets of Oslo and you know, try to persuade some businesses to go and see you? They use their network to help you get appointments. You go and pitch to them. I've got this pain point, this company has it, I think your company could too, yes? We're going to build a product around this. And at the end of week two, they sometimes come back with already contract signed, conditional contracts. If you can create a product that solves this problem, here, you've got this contract, you know, to do this piece of business for us.
Right. So very, so, yeah, very different, very different strategy.
In, yeah, in 1 month. And then so he said that you move away from that. Then he wants to create this clusters of super clusters. He says super clusters is where the whole ecosystem of like-minded people, companies, academics come together. And they work to, and when you have a super cluster, the time also is accelerated, right? You can get things done faster. Again, speed is another essence of this. You try to create super clusters around obvious areas that your country has strength in, and then just get everyone working together, working faster to try to create successful companies or products out there. Mm. Kind of interesting. So he said Malaysia, he's looking to see, he's going to be helping to try to see which are the areas where he can create super clusters around in Malaysia, right, as the low-hanging fruits, and then, you know, work on some other stretch goals you want. Maybe we want to create a super cluster around machine learning. Okay, let's see if we can pull people together.
Right. Okay, and so let's move on to
Silicon Valley.
Yes.
So the link is there because he's talking about speed, right? So I spoke to Dan Koo, Dato Dan Koo, who's the president of Endec Americas. They actually set up based there in 2015 August. Mm-hmm. Idea then is to say to position ASEAN as a place that US, you know, entrepreneurs and businesses want to do business with, especially in the tech space, and primarily Silicon Valley based companies to come to ASEAN by using Malaysia as their gateway into ASEAN. Hmm. And the second part of it is to, hey, get companies in ASEAN to leverage on Malaysia and MDEC to help them get into the US market also. So that was the high-level goal. And how they're trying to execute this is through the strategy called ICE, which is immersion. The C stands for connection. And then the E is a hybrid of the word excel and accelerate. So you need to excel at accelerating. Mm. So and he's saying, you know, in the U.S., the reality is even till today, a lot of people still don't know about ASEAN. Yeah. And I had my jaw-dropping moment of the year when I attended this, you know, it's called Tech Mesh ASEAN, right? Mm-hmm. And it's held at iLabs, which is also now a digital hub, you know, recognized by MDEC. So it was held there, these entrepreneurs, investors from around the world. There were 20 of them who came, 11 were from the Silicon Valley. Okay, they came and one of them stood on stage, not stage, like, it's just a classroom, right? He stood there and he said, you know, we are here thanks to MDEC and thanks to Dan Koo, and you know. And then the guy said something like, you know, I never knew about ASEAN before. And I said, what? Wow. Highly intelligent person, ASEAN. Not even Malaysia, I can understand. Not even ASEAN, a market of 620 million, right? And so, and then you see Dan say, see, even you got problems with getting them to appreciate and understand where ASEAN is, much less Malaysia. We're just too small a market. So you got to use the law of ASEAN. Mm. And what they're doing is, they've targeted the MDEX gain companies. These are companies which have already, you know, a good amount of revenue above 10 million or whatever. And MDEX is trying to accelerate them into the 200 million club, ringgit club, right?
Right.
They've brought 20 over companies in 2015. 2016 was 20 over. This year, they brought 19 companies last year. But this year, Dan said what was interesting, they didn't just bring the supply side, which is the tech companies who are trying to sell. They also brought the demand side. And the demand side, the Multimedia University, the president himself went. They had spared. They had Petronas also go along. Mm. And there was one more company that went along. So these guys are going there and getting getting exposed to what kind of solutions there are out there and what's going on in the space and coming back. And then maybe then they say, hey, you know, MDEC, any of your companies are able to offer that solution? It's a subtle also sales pitch, right, about right. These guys. And what I like was MDEC, Dan was saying, look, the portion of Malaysia's GDP that's connected to the digital economy is already about 18%. So they're definitely going to hit their 20% target by 2020. So Dan says, look, how do we address the other 80%, which are your non-digital, non-tech companies, right? So get them exposed to what's going on in the US in terms of digital immersion and all. And then when they come back, then they're ready to adopt. And, you know, like I said, they'll maybe look at, hey, where's the supply side in this country first? So kind of interesting. So the link with the Christian Rangan is he's talking about accelerating, creating a product or a company. Mm. They've also partnered with Google and Google has something called the Design Sprint. And this year in July, six companies from the GAIN program spent a week in New York because it's a fintech-related design sprint to help them, you know, come up with products, you know, and the validation within that 1 week period. So these companies, including FavePay, you know, Chen Chao was there. You got Kipple, which is a e-wallet that just launched by I think a green packet, right? And then you've got Trenglo also, and another company called VE Cash, run by Manchun. So they were there, and then three of them have already created products. So you actually go out on the streets of New York, and you try to show your tablet or your laptop to people, or your phone, right? Hey, look, you know, is this something that would be good for you to use in your life?
Right.
So kind of, so sprint. But so these are the kind of things MDEC is trying to do to really, on the soft side, embed Malaysia as the hub, as a gateway for Southeast Asia, you know, for entrepreneurs and companies in the Silicon Valley to come in. And he's out there networking and creating these linkages, right? And then getting our companies there. When you go there also, then you have validation that the product you have that has gained a market here already has got the legs, you know, to stand in the competitive US market too. So a lot of good stuff going on there. It's really exciting.
Right. Yeah. We're going to talk about gaming now, and this is Jin's area. So Wan Hazmir, the Malaysian developer that was part of the team behind Final Fantasy 15 and lead designer on Monster the Deep Final Fantasy 15, announced his departure from Square Enix. Yes. And is setting up his own development studio here in Malaysia.
Yeah, so Wan Hazmir, he is a well-known... it's not a scoop. He announced this during Level Up.
Sorry, I was thinking ice cream. Haagen-Dazs.
Well, he announced this during Level Up 2017.
In November, right?
Yeah, in November already. Okay, so he made it during his keynote speech that he was actually going to leave Square Enix, a Japanese company. Mm. He was actually based in Tokyo for almost 8 years. Has very extensive overseas experience and having worked on one of the biggest games you can ever imagine. Many RPG fans, I'm sure, they're all game developers actually envy him. But he's actually coming back to Malaysia to set up a new studio called Metronomic. It's spelled in the Malay spelling, Metronomic, M-I-K at the back. So, I also was curious as to why you want to call the studio Metronomic. It sounds like it's going to be
Mechatronic.
Mechatronic, but it's music-based. Music. Right. He looks upon the metronome as an inspiration because the way that the metronome helps musicians keep time and stuff like that. He also wants, you know, part of the company culture is that everybody keeps in time and knows how to develop, how they want to do, to work properly. Everyone has got communication together. At the same time, it also kind of denotes also his next game that he's going to make is also something that's music related. But he is a bit cautious. He's not really saying much. He's only going to have a prototype of a game by April next year. But it sounds fun and interesting because, you know, he has shown it to close doors to several people, and they said it's an action game with you know, very musical and fun elements in it, and you know, they say it's a unique idea, and they want to see what he does with it.
Keeping time and everything, that must be his lessons learned while in Japan.
We have not embedded it in Malaysian culture yet, and it's important productivity competitive tool, you know, if you get everybody aligned, respect timing.
So hopefully this is a good thing that he decided to set base here back home and then to do this, and hopefully that kind of culture.
He also is hoping to give back as well, educate the community, give the experience. He is more or less also tied up with MDEC as well. He's working in the Level Up Inc. In Bangsar South. It's an incubation center, if you haven't heard. Also, it's an incubation center. There are many other studios are going to be coming in, and he's hoping to spread the knowledge around. And even one day, he said he hopes to even open up his own schools because he thinks creative thinking is such a thing that's lacking in the country right now. He wants to inspire people to, you know, take up creative thinking instead of just become a regular drone. That's what our education system needs to pump out.
This conversation about education. And we're going to talk about PASA and trends after this. Karimjit Singh, Anusha Kandasivam, and Chong Jin Seong from DigitalNewsAsia.com. Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
Bankers, financiers, and moneymakers. BFM 89.9. 89.9.
You're still listening to Enterprise. Frida Liu here, Karamjit Singh, Anusha Kantasivam, Chong Jin Seong from digitalnewsasia.com. The last session with them for this year. Anyway, of course, what we do is we talk about what's happening in the technology sphere. Anu, this is the second online grocery store to use web markets called Pasar, is hoping to differentiate itself through its operation model and focuses more on individual merchants.
Yep. Yeah, so as we all know, the first online grocery platform that uses Pasar is PasarTab. Mm-hmm. But what PasarTab does is it sources its groceries from two really big markets in KL, and the user, when you order your groceries, you don't really know which Pasar is coming from and which merchants it's coming from, because the PasarTab shoppers, they themselves go to the merchants that they are affiliated with, and then they buy whatever groceries and give it to the delivery guy, and then he gives it to you. So what Pasar does is they have five markets in KL. Actually, technically it's four markets in KL and one in PJ. But it's, PJ is basically KL. Somebody's going to kill me for saying that. And they put individual merchants on the app. So let's say, for example, you always go to the TTDI market and you buy, people tend to buy from the same merchants all the time, right?
Correct.
So what you can do is go there, choose TTDI market, and then look at the list of merchants, and then see the one that you always buy from, and then choose him or her, and then buy the stuff from them.
Right.
The prices, according to Pasar, are exactly the same as if you were going to the Pasar itself.
Okay.
But they do, of course, charge a handling fee and a delivery fee of about 10%. It's not a lot of Manila. It's like about 10 ringgit maximum, 8 ringgit, something like that. Handling fee plus delivery fee. Mm. Yeah, so that's basically how they want to differentiate themselves. They have 78 merchants right now on the app in five markets, and they also offer non-halal groceries.
Mm.
PasarTab doesn't. So offering non-halal groceries opens up a bigger buyer market, definitely.
Right.
Yes.
So the delivery, I think, like, you know, if you save time, parking, petrol, is reasonable.
Yeah.
My idea going to Pasar is not very enticing. I don't find it, you know.
A lot of, that's what the guys told me.
Been
so,
one in years.
Yeah, people don't really like going to the Pasar. It's dirty, it's wet. You have to wake up early in the morning, and then, you know, and most people, working people, don't have time to do that. Mm. So their target is actually young working professionals who don't have time during the week. And then in the weekends, you just want to stay in. You have so many things to do. You want to spend time with your family. You don't want to
chill.
Just want to chill out. And also, so I did ask, you know, young people usually go to supermarkets.
Mm.
It's people who are the older generation, like our parents, who would go to the wet market. I mean, obviously people do go to wet markets as well, but if I had a choice,
it'd be to a supermarket.
I would go to the supermarket, which is nearby me.
Which is air conditioning.
Yeah. But so he said they did a lot of on-ground research. They went and talked to people in the Pasar and everything, and
that's their design sprint, man. Sounds like it.
He said that. So they asked, okay? So, and a lot of people, he said, were, when I say he, I mean the founder, co-founder, Tunku Nasran Adil Muzaffar, who is known as Eddie. And then the other co-founder and CEO is Jesse Wong. And then the director is Tunku Danny Naisfuddin Muzaffar.
Okay.
So Tunku Danny told me that a lot of people he saw were older people with a young person.
Right.
And when they talked to them, they said, oh, this sounds interesting. Really? We can order from the Pasar and online? Like, what is this magic? But the older people generally said, oh, I don't know if I can do this. You know, I'm not sure if I can. And then the young person with them, with their son, their daughter, their niece and nephew, said, oh, I'll download it for you and I'll show you how to do it. Because a lot of the time they were like, oh, I have to bring my mom to the market in the morning. I don't want to wake up. I'll just order for her instead. You know, so that's that kind of
thing. So that's
thing
that space, lah.
Yeah.
So, and then, of course, sometimes the old people say, but I don't know if it's really fresh. Yeah. Yeah. I have to see myself. So, but anyway.
Always, even young people actually say that.
Yeah,
really.
So Tunku Danny said, because the merchant themselves chooses the stuff, the groceries. So they have this, they basically have an incentive to make sure that all their goods are fresh and nice and exactly what you want.
Okay.
So that you will come back to them again and again. You keep ordering from them.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And Karam, I noticed you've already switched off your computer, but
you had a chat
with Sudhef Banga, the managing director of IDC ASEAN. You asked him about trends for Malaysia, Indonesia, and Thailand. So is it 2017 or 2018?
Yeah, 2017. I asked him because, you know, it's the end of the year, so I wanted to find out in terms of enterprise, what were the trends he saw. Actually, he didn't talk about Thailand, he talked about Indonesia, he talked about Malaysia. Singapore is actually run by another person. So Sudhef Banga is the head of IDC ASEAN, but it's the 9 countries, excluding Singapore. So you just want to know how, you know, big businesses have been, you know, investing, where their tech investment has been going, right? That's part of what DNA does too. So he actually said that there's a lot of excitement around, because the sexy thing now is digital, right, and transformation. So a lot of spending is kind of happening and interest is happening around that, right? Because it's a sexy thing and it's natural. You want to go to your board and maybe, you know, they also understand, hey, I'm reading about digital all the time. What are we doing there? So Indonesia actually is more exciting and tangible than Malaysia. I was kind of surprised at that. So he said because they're already looking to kind of move and try things. Whereas in Malaysia, he said that the companies are still use the word coy and careful.
Okay.
And they're actually, everybody's kind of looking for that magic, the silver bullet, he says, you know, that case study of someone already doing it successfully, whose company mirrors or who's in the industry mirrors your industry, and you say, okay, man, that's not gone very well. We're going to follow that to a large extent. And you know, Sudhef says, look, if you're looking for this this magic bullet, I can tell you now it's not going to happen. You're not going to find anyone case study that you know, to a large extent fits what your company is doing. So idea is you got to start, you know, experimenting and doing pilots and you know, adapting to digital now. So that's the case. And he says that it's still also, the other interesting thing he found that in Indonesia and Malaysia is that, so all these businesses are still run by elderly people, right? Above 45, 50. And then he said, so the management philosophy and culture that's embedded in their DNA is that you're guided by KPIs and then you're guided by benchmarks, right? And he says that KPIs and benchmarks don't sync with, you know, you trying to do digital in your business, right? Trying to adapt to it doesn't work. And you have these two and they don't fit together. So that's a challenge for management, you know, to retune. And I think, Kaku-san was talking about mindset also, right?
Yeah.
To retune your mindset so that you cannot be KPI, cannot be a benchmark, you know, driven if you want to start adapting your business to digital. They don't go that way. That's wrong. And then you said, I said, what about specific enterprise trends? He says that cloud has been there. They've been talking about cloud since 2012, right? Yeah. And adopting it. So the cloud adoption is still slow. He said Malaysia went from not adopting cloud, enterprises went to outsourcing using open cloud. And then they're swinging back to becoming hybrid, which is a combination of where some of your applications, you know, your hardware especially, right, your software is in a public a data center with Google, with Alibaba, whoever, Amazon, and then some you can keep in house. You say now that and even vendors now are talking about hybrid because that's a language that the CIO, CTOs can appreciate and it syncs with them, you know, it gels with them. I can understand. Let's talk. Now maybe we can have the budget for that. Right. So it's moving towards the hybrid cloud. And now if you move away, and I don't want to get too much into it, you can read the article when I write it. I just met him yesterday afternoon.
Okay.
So he said at the high level, what struck him and what struck me also that in this region, the 9 countries, when you talk about IT spend, 70 to 80% is still hardware based. And if you just imagine, and this is kind of mind-boggling because now you've already got, you know, cloud services offering out there. Your infrastructure can just be on the cloud. You don't worry about
the
how many
legacy
servers you need.
Systems. Yeah.
Or even the thinking is more legacy than systems, right? You're still investing in hardware when there's really the economic argument is not there anymore. And I asked him, so come on, why is this happening? And he thinks that it's also a matter of control. IT departments, if everything's go, you know, it's outsourced, then
I have no job.
Yeah, not no job. Your budgets are cut then, because you know your capex is not a key part of your budget anymore. It's taken care of. He thinks that's one, but IT departments all say that, look, when we're gonna do this, use open cloud, and or use a hybrid or do it in house. You know, we are worried about open. When you do talk about cloud and you wanna do it open cloud, you're worried a public cloud. You worry about losing control and security. So they always use control and security as reasons why, you know, it's not safe, not secure, so we need to keep it within us.
But surely there are security measures and everything that you can use now.
Yes, of course. I know, yes, there are. But yeah, that's the argument they're using. And he thinks that's a real human, you know, concern need underlying that. Mm. And interesting enough, when you mentioned, just talking about IT jobs, I remember when I did the story on DHL, they're them investing $1.4 billion in Malaysia over the next 3 years. I think Asia Pac head was down. And after the press con and the question, I just went up to him and I said, look, you got a lot of people who are all very tech savvy based in your Cyberjaya hub. How much of it is in your radar, this thing about higher levels of automation, you know, reducing the level of jobs, you know, that your people will be doing. And he said something that I think is very important for everyone to take away. And he says that, look, when you're in IT, as long as you take responsibility for your own career, for your own, you know, relearning and upskilling, people in IT will never be out of jobs. But you must, you know, be in control. You must take control of your own career development, right? There are so many programs you can do online to offer courses for free, or you pay a little bit. Incredible. There's no excuse for anyone in tech to say, oh, you know, higher levels of software, 5 years down the road, machine learning is going to take over, you know, my job. And no. He said, no, and the best part is, you know, the jobs that these machines will take over are jobs that tech people don't even want to do. They're the boring, menial jobs.
Yeah.
And a lot of exciting work is being created, and that's for people who are in tech. So the careers in tech are still plentiful. Some are still shaping as we talk, you know, but if you are with it on the wave, you know, you'll have an amazing career ahead if you decide to go into tech. So don't take that as an excuse that the machines are going to take over my job. Maybe I should just become an occupational therapist, and, you know, and people are always going to have, you know, ache, back pains, or, you know, muscle pains, and I can go and do that as a service.
So we look forward to the article.
Exactly.
So we're going to end off the year. We're ending the Gujarati.
We got only 4 more entrepreneurs to profile. We've been stretching it out so that it lasts over 2 years. Maybe that's not a good idea. But if you read over this weekend, Saturday, we're going to be talking about Mark Chang, and you can find out why he was a Gujarati. And Mark Chang also, by the way, one of the investors in BFM.
Yes.
Yep. So he's your boss, man. Your boss's boss.
Early investors.
Yeah. And then you've got, and on Sunday, we're going to be talking about Nazreen Hassan from Cradle, also a key part of the ecosystem.
Our
first
interviewee on Breakfast Grill.
Really? Yeah. Very first. Wow. A bit of history. Your first investor and your first interviewee. Yeah. Voila. This is a show of first, man.
A show of first. So,
tech ecosystem powers all, man. No slowing down, okay? Lots of exciting things happening.
So with that, we'll look forward to seeing you guys again in the new year. Merry Christmas to all of you. Karamjit Singh, Anusha Kandasivam, and Chong Jin Seong from DigitalNewsAsia.com. This is a Chakaday Christmas.
Yeah, man, Chakaday Christmas. Okay, man, Chakaday!
Chakaday! BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to BFM.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.